This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon.
It is still not too late for Ukrainian authorities to find a solution that respects the will of the Ukrainian people. Countries around the world are watching the actions of Ukrainian leaders. We urge them to seize the moment.
Of course, Secretary of State Colin Powell, speaking at the State Department on Wednesday about the disputed results of the Ukrainian presidential election, and if the day he was talking about seizing has come today, it might in fact be close. The current Ukrainian Prime Minister Viktor Yanukovych, the pro-Russian candidate that was backed by President Leonid Kuchma, was initially declared the winner of last Sunday's election. But in an emergency session today, the Ukrainian parliament declared the election invalid because of voting irregularities. At the same time, it's not clear that has any legally binding power. Meanwhile, tens of thousands of supporters of the opposition candidate Viktor Yushchenko remain in Independence Square and elsewhere in the streets of Kiev. NPR senior news analyst Dan Shore joins us. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning, Scott.
And a momentous day, day after day, in the Ukrainian elections. And this was not something that people had necessarily talked about in advance or there was much consciousness of in the United States as could perhaps present this problem. Remind us, please, what the stakes are for the United States and the rest of the world in democracy taking root in the Ukraine.
Wow. All right. Let me mention, however, that the Supreme Court of Ukraine is meeting on Monday to review the whole situation of the election. Mm-hmm. And interesting that they're learning American-style democracy of letting the Supreme Court do it very, very fast. What we have at stake in this, I would say, we put this way: mm-hmm. with the end of the Cold War, with the dissolution of the Soviet Empire, the Soviet Union, and now a series of states, Russia by large part, wants to maintain control over them. Mm-hmm. They tend to want to move westward. The United States has gotten military bases in Kyrgyzstan and Tajikistan, mm-hmm. Which the Russians don't like at all. In this case, you have one candidate backed by the Russians, one candidate backed more or less by the West, trying to encourage them to look westward. The result of that is to put a strain, or an additional strain, because of several others, to put a strain on what appeared at one point to be a very warm relationship between President Bush and President Putin.
Mm-hmm. Well, which renews the question, how risky is that, if that in fact is the official policy of the U.S. now to seem to, if not outright side with the opposition, to which Mr. Putin is opposed, at least say the opposition hasn't been heard from and needs a chance now?
Well, they are more or less saying that. We've had it twice. One, the stronger statement came from Secretary of State Colin Powell. And then the president spoke yesterday along the same lines in somewhat milder tones, apparently trying to smooth over relations with Russia. Mm-hmm. But it is important. Obviously, it's important to the millions of Ukrainians as well. But as happens these days, somewhere you'll find that a small election in Ukraine is a big issue for the rest of the world.
And, of course, that brings us to Iraq, where in the past 24 hours, 17 political parties have signed a petition calling for the postponement of the election scheduled for January 30th because of the difficulties of holding an election with the poor security situation there. Yeah. Prime Minister Alawi's own party signed that petition.
Right.
The Iraqi Islamic Party, the country's main Sunni political party, signed it. The two largest Kurdish political parties. At the same time, no Shiite party signed the petition. What do you make of this split?
Well, first of all, one has to say that this is very bad news for the Bush administration. The president had taken great pride in speeches before and since the election in saying, look at it, they're going to have January 30th, they're going to have a free election, they're going to be another democratic country, mm-hmm. while some others said, you're not going to get an election there unless security is a lot better than it is now with the insurgency moving from one city to another. And so, in the first place, there is that. In the second place, the fact that the Sunnis cannot safely go and vote because most of the terrorism that's going on today is in the Sunni triangle and directed frequently against Sunnis, police, and others who wanted to or were willing to go to work in an armed force there. That is, at this point, very bad news. Mm-hmm. It was always said, yes, election, if we get some sense of security there first. Well, we have not gotten yet a sense of security, and so they're in trouble.
But at the same time, let me ask you about what seems to be the enunciated attitude of some of the outspoken Shia political parties who say, look, we're 60% of this country. It's the Sunnis who are the seat of the insurgency. We can't let the insurgency, in a sense, we can't let them delay the arrival of democracy in this country just because they're willing to blow things up.
Yeah, well, that is their argument. But then the other way to look at it is this way. Have an election without the Sunnis, say we'll get back to you later. Mm-hmm. Sounds a little bit funny. The Shiites are riding high. As you suggested, they are 60% of the population, mm-hmm. which means that in any proportional representation election, they are bound to come up ahead, the in charge of the government that follows. The Sunnis dread that day. And then, on top of that, you're getting this wave of continuing violence, and so that's where they are.
Iran made a deal last week with the European Union to halt the production of enriched uranium. This week, Iran said that, in fact, it wants an exemption from some of the terms of last week's deal. Then it backtracked again and said it would abide by terms of the original idea. How do you add up that back and forth?
Well, I'll give you my own suspicion. My own suspicion is that there are factions in Iran, that there are young ones who are really sick and tired of the Ayatollah Khomeini's dicta, who really would like to see them come out into the modern world. Mm-hmm. And if the price of that is to give up aspirations towards having an Iranian nuclear bomb, for many, that is acceptable risk. Not for all, I think. So what I think you get is this very strange thing. They come into Vienna, the IAEA, yes, we're going to stop doing the enriched uranium thing. Next day they say, yeah, we forgot to tell you that we're going to do plutonium instead. Then we say, no plutonium either. And they make another agreement saying, well, for the time being, we agree, and so on. And next day they welch on that agreement. That cannot be the intention of the people in power there. That must represent some factional infighting in Tehran.
Hmm. The jailed Palestinian leader Marwan Barghouti has decided, says he's not going to run in the upcoming Palestinian presidential elections. Unless he'd been released to run, he would have run James Michael Curley style from prison. He's thrown his support behind Mahmoud Abbas. What does this represent for Mr. Abbas? And was it surprising, given the fact Mr. Barghouti seemed to have almost the most amount of popular support, at least in the polls?
I think that, Barghouti is very popular, representing what you might call one of the young guard, mm-hmm. who were really pretty fed up with Yasser Arafat anyway, thought there was too much corruption, and wanted to see something. And I think that Barghouti rather supports that. I think Barghouti is moving towards adopting a more helpful position. He will work with Mohammed Abbas, who now appears to be very much the front runner. They will work together, and at some point, I think Barghouti is yet to be heard from. I think the story of the Palestinians today is the emergence of what you might call the new guard.
Okay, thanks very much, Dan Shore.